This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy, your host. This evening, our guest is Samantha O'Byrne. Samantha, I don't know you personally, and we've never met, but I have to disclose that my cousin's husband is on the board at O'Hare Commons. Not that that necessarily matters one way or the other, but just so you know. And she's going to share with us some really beautiful things that she's doing over there in Hamilton, and I can't wait to hear all about it. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. Hi, Samantha.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. We've been working on your episode for a while and getting you on the air, and I'm really excited and happy that you're here. Please tell our listeners what you do.
Well, my name is Samantha O'Byrne. My husband and I have lived in Montana for 20 years. I'm a gardener and I'm a birdwatching enthusiast. And I'm pretty much constantly looking for opportunities to be outside. But I think at this point in my life, my greatest fortune is the work that I'm doing with O'Hara Commons. And in a nutshell, everything we do is investing our energies in connecting local people with local food.
So I know that you weren't always the executive director of O'Hare Commons, and there was probably a lot of groundwork that happened in your life prior to taking up this task at hand. Tell us a little bit about your influences in life and the journey that led you to Hamilton, Montana and O'Hare Commons.
Well, I was born in Michigan, but my first memories come from my upbringing in California, where I pretty much was always outside. When I was 16 years old, my mother decided to return to college. And I was able to leave high school a year early, and I attended university with my mother. And that was a special experience. I graduated with a degree in economics, but my fascination with the field was based in economic anthropology. And basically, that is how societies use and distribute and replenish available resources. So since my late teens and my early 20s, I've been interested in sustainability.
So you grew up mostly in California, it sounds like? Is that right?
Right. I've actually now lived in Montana longer than I've lived anywhere else.
And what is it that brought you to Hamilton?
I met my husband in Tucson, Arizona, and we relocated to Idaho as a center place to explore the entire region for someplace we both wanted to relocate. And we kept driving through the Bitterroot Valley, going to all these other places. And finally, we were like, well, what about the Bitterroot Valley? And we moved here, and we've been here ever since.
What was it about the Bitterroot that drew you?
My husband, his name is Steve, he really wanted a new mountain range to roam. And I, looking at some of the remote places he was considering, decided I needed to be at least within an hour of a university. So we're about 40 minutes away from University of Montana, which gives us a nice cultural connection.
And then what did you do when you first went to Hamilton?
The very first thing that I did when I moved to Hamilton was I had a job with Garden City Seeds. It's a seed company, or was a seed company, that was located here in Hamilton. And I worked in their seed department. I worked in their nursery, and I worked on their trial farm.
So tell us a little bit about how that led to O'Hare Commons.
Well, when Garden City Seed decided to go out of business, I realized that we no longer had any options for organic gardening. And that's when I started a small retail garden business. And I had that business, a wonderful little shop, for 13 years. And 5 years into that business, I moved into the O'Hara House, which is the location where the O'Hara Commons is now. And I had told myself I would always grow my business with what my customer base was looking for. And with the economic downturn in 2008, people were looking for information, and they were looking for education, and they were looking for experience. And truthfully, as soon as I moved into the O'Hara Commons, I knew that ultimately I saw this location. We're in the center of Hamilton. We have about a third of an acre. Much of it is green space with established fruit trees. The house was built in 1896. It's a beautiful, majestic old farmhouse. And for as long as I've lived in the Bitterroot Valley in Hamilton, people have come to these grounds and used them as public grounds. And I just visualized that eventually this would be a community center, and now it is.
And it's very beautiful. I feel like I would really like to delve in a little bit on the building and the structures itself and a little bit of the history between O'Hara House. But let's talk about sustainability. I feel like we need to tie all of this into what that means to you and how that drives and motivates you to do what you're doing.
The simple definition of sustainability is simply to avoid depletion of resources in order to maintain balance. And sustainability is really a lifestyle. I feel like the word has been used a lot in recent years.
Yeah, it's just kind of thrown around out there. Do we even really know what that means, right?
Right. And, really, it's simply a concept that we can easily apply to our work and our home life and our relationships and our community, the greater environment. Simply, one can't take without replenishing. And when you have the balance of sustainability, you know that you're giving back what you've taken. And I really like the example in your garden soils. You cannot continue to grow productive crops in a soil that you are just taking from and depleting. You have to restore the nutrients. In terms of economics and home life, it's your checking book. You can't constantly write checks without restoring a balance and keep going.
So in California, it sounds like with the degree that you were getting and that you now have, that was part of your psyche and your thinking early on in life?
It was. I was brought up by a single mother, and we lived with quite a bit of economic instability. And so when I was in my very first economics class, I just sat there dumbfounded because my professor was speaking in very cognitive terms about the thing that probably most frightened me at that point in time, which was economic instability. And that's what was really my very first hook. And that professor, Professor Sue Hayes with Sonoma State University, took me under her wing. I was pretty young, and it was a university that was known for reentry students at that point in time. And she really became my mentor. And it was an essay that I wrote on education that allowed me to really look at economics as something beyond money and banking and finance. And economics drives all of our societies, and economics drive culture. And without economic stability, without economic sustainability, cultures and society really suffers.
This is true. And let's talk about O'Hara House. How did you acquire that? And what's some of the history behind? I'm going to come and visit you the next time in Hamilton. Mark my words.
Please do.
And experience it for myself. And I've heard it's really something special. Tell us about it.
It really is. We're very inclusive. And one of my goals in life is always to make sure that people are comfortable. And I don't think of myself as necessarily a particularly nurturing person, but when people walk into the O'Hara house, sometimes they're a little bit confused. Maybe they've been here when it was a business in the past. And it's really easy for me to say that I took what was a business, a gardening business, and I was able to take all of the elements and make them into programs that would serve the community. And we are very education-driven. We really want to connect people to their food, and that might be utilizing our commercial education kitchen with classes. We have over 200 workshops a year. We strive for half for adults and half for children, but our children's programming, the youth programming, has really taken off. And I would say at this point in time, we're probably one-third adult programs and two-thirds children programs. But we have children in the kitchen learning knife skills. We have children in our gardens planting seeds. We had our tadpoles group, which is a nature play group that meets every Friday out in our gardens today, learning how to harvest beans off of bean plants without harming the plant. So education is a big element of what we do. Another really large element of what we do is resource sharing. And, you know, there are certain things that we might need once or twice a year. They're expensive. You have to store them. You have to maintain them. So we have community lending libraries. We have garden tools. We have cider presses, wood chippers. We have a really popular truck share. And I even know one of our community members finally decided to sell her truck that she used once or twice a year because she knew she had access to a truck through membership at O'Hara Commons. We also have a seed library. And the seed library is open to members. People can come in and check out anywhere. We're up to like 70 varieties of locally grown seeds. The majority of them are vegetables. But all of these resources that we have, we tie them back into education because we really want to teach people how to continue growing seeds or how to safely use a miter saw. So the two really work together, the education and the resource sharing. And we really feel like we're a demonstration hub. We have the community gardens. We have our grounds that are open to the public. We have licensed kitchen. And that involves a lot of outreach and building membership through events. And one of our most exciting things is we're now in our second year of our Wednesday afternoon farmers market. And we are meeting now June through September on Wednesdays from 4:30 until 6:30 p.m. We have 9 vendors, and the vendors have access to grounds, and they're on the grass under the trees, and it's all food-based. So everything that is sold at our farmers market is based on developing local economy and supporting local growers.
So what? Before we delve in further, what I think we need to do is take our little midpoint break here. I know it goes by really quick. And there's a whole slew of things that I would like to talk to you more about. So please stay with us. And this is Heartstock Radio. Thanks for listening. Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. And this evening we have Samantha O'Byrne, who is the executive director at O'Hara Commons in Hamilton, Montana. Thanks so much for being with us, Samantha.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So can you kind of walk us through the process of how you acquired the grounds and the house, O'Hara House, and how you got to where you are right now? It sounds like, how many years has it been since you first initially inhabited O'Hara Commons?
So I have been associated with the building and the grounds for the past 10 years. And when I moved here, as the garden shop and instantly saw the vision of the grounds and the facility becoming a community center. At that point in time, a dear friend of mine, his name is Andreas Ehrman. He was the first person outside of family with whom I shared my vision of creating the community center, and it fit his life vision as well. And he's been a great catalyst and motivator in the process. He is actually, formally, he is the landlord. He's the property owner. And we have a very secure, wonderful, long-term agreement with him for the grounds. The building is really wonderful. We have the entire downstairs is open. We have rooms that can be used as community rooms, meeting rooms. We rent them out to members, and the grounds are, we just recently hosted the Bitterroot Audubon Society. We've done the past few years of them kicking off their great calendar, and they have a party every year for the photographers. We have just kicked off birthday bashes, and so people are able to have wonderful birthday parties here. Our grounds include a little play center for kids. Any time of the day, I can look outside on the grounds, and I can see people having picnics. Their kids are playing on the play set. People know that we have, over the past 10 years, had absolutely no chemicals on our grounds. So it's a very safe and welcoming environment. We have incredible established old fruit trees. We've got three productive apricot trees, a pear tree, a couple apple trees. So today with our youth group, all of the kids were eating just freshly ripe, freshly dropping in front of them apricots from the lawn.
So all of that was there when you started your business there. The established gardens and the trees and all of that were already there.
Not the gardens. Yeah, we actually, one of the very first grants that we got was wonderful. It enabled us to fence in a garden space. So we have 9 raised beds in our garden, and we did have to fence it because even though we're in the center of Hamilton, we have a lot of deer pressure on our garden spaces. And every year we use those gardens as a demonstration garden, and they are themed. And this year, the theme is, it's the leguminous garden. Mm-hmm. So everything that we're growing in there that is not permanent bed like the strawberries belongs to the bean and the pea family. And one of the beds that I'm most excited about, and one of my 9-year-old friends helped me plant it, we're actually trying to grow peanuts. Mm-hmm. And it's an opportunity to really like educate people on legumes are fantastic. They're a fantastic source of protein, but they also build your soil.
Mm. Yeah, George Washington Carver would be very...
Right. Wish me luck. It's a challenge.
Yeah. So kind of walk us through your process when you kind of evolved from a garden business to a community center. How did you accomplish that?
Everything just fell into place. Is something that I've learned in life. I think the best advice I've ever received was from my mother, who made sure that my sister and I always knew that we could accomplish whatever we set our minds to and encouraged us to follow our dreams. And so any obstacle that came up, there was always an easy and creative solution. At the point in time that I was getting ready to file the papers for a 501c3 designation, it was a little frightening. It was way outside of anything that I've ever done before. And at that point in time, I developed a fantastic friendship with a woman who's now one of our board members. Her name is Tracy Bignall. And she just stepped in at the right time and helped me with the completion of the process because she was quite familiar with it. And we were able to receive our 501c3 designation. I think it was a total of 6 weeks, which is unheard of. Mm. But we had everything in place. We already had our brochures. We had our board. We had our bylaws. All of the processes and systems and procedures were really being set up in a very comprehensive and extensive manner. And it had so much to do with the assistance that I had every time I turned and I needed help. It was there. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the great things about Hamilton is the sense of community and everybody rallies together, yeah. Especially when it comes to gardening. I mean, that's one of my favorite memories in life is going over there and visiting my grandmother and her extensive, beautiful garden because there were just things that we could pick and put in our mouths immediately right. That were just really, really yummy.
Right.
Thank
All
you,
right.
Grandma. So... going from that model of an actual business to a nonprofit, how did you manage to sustain yourself economically all these years?
I have an incredibly supportive husband.
So he bankrolls the whole thing? Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. He took care of me personally.
Oh, that's important.
And
that's an important job.
Yeah. And the support that we've had from Andreas Herrmann, he's been such an incredible catalyst in making this happen and helping with the transition. And, you know, there have been lean times. And I would say anybody who's interested in doing something like this, you really have to be prepared for, you have to have somebody who's like, who has the vision and the dedication that is required. And I can say easily, people laugh at me because they think that I did this in order to work less than what I was as a small business owner. And I'm easily working, 65 to 70 hour weeks without a doubt. And I'm working a lot more, but it feeds me and it's fulfilling. And the work that I'm doing is so fantastic. It's not a job. It's being able to utilize all of my energy into a passion.
Which I would imagine it sounds like it feeds you greatly.
It does.
Yeah. So my cousin, Pat. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Has told me about a really special program that you do with butterflies.
Yes. So our youth programming, we feel very strongly about children being outdoors. And we also feel very strongly about the conservation of our natural resources that we have, because our food is only going to be as good as the quality of the air, the soil, and the water. And those are all fundamental elements to actually being able to have food, as are our pollinators. And this is our third year of our pollinator project. The past 2 years, we've built it into our youth programs. And this year, we did not build it into our youth programs. And I'm a little bit relieved that we haven't. So what we've been doing over the past few years is we monitor milkweed patches throughout the Bitterroot Valley. And we are looking for, we go out with loops, and these are adults, not children.
Loops.
And we're looking for eggs.
Loops, as in
and
magnifiers.
Magnifying glasses. Yes, loops, yeah. Magnifying glass, exactly. Monarch butterflies lay eggs only on milkweed. And a lot of people think of milkweed as a toxic weed, which it's not. It's actually a native. The state of Montana has 8 varieties of native milkweed. I think I got that number right. It could be 7. And without milkweed, the monarchs won't lay their eggs. And so what we've been seeing this year is we had a delayed season. The monarchs migrated probably pretty late because we were wet and cold in June. The past 2 years, we collected eggs first on June 6th and then on June 22nd. This year, we found a couple caterpillars, but it wasn't until yesterday that we actually found our first eggs. Mm. So we're at 50% at this point in time of where we typically are with this project. And it's a little distressing. Our roadsides are the most popular places for the milkweed habitat and the milkweed gets mowed. It can be a fire danger. What's really exciting to me is in the area that I live, people have stopped and asked me about what I'm doing on the side of the road in the heat of the day. And what I've seen out of this, and I've taken photos of it, is people have begun to actually eco-sculpt. So what they're doing is they're actually mowing their own roadside swaths, and they are mowing around the milkweed, and they're leaving these beautiful stands of milkweed in hopes of creating more monarch habitat.
Well, why? I mean, I always like to play a little bit of the devil's advocate here, so I have to ask this question. Why do we care about the butterflies and the milkweed? I mean, really?
Right. They're bioindicators. Mm. And when we start seeing lower populations of butterflies, we're seeing the beginning of an ecosystem being impacted by an unsustainable, unnatural system. It's out of balance. So they're very symbolic for balance.
So our survival is really indicated by and reflected back to us by the butterflies, it sounds like.
Most certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you go out and you collect the eggs, and then what happens?
Oh, it's such a fun process. So you really want to start with eggs. Eggs will hatch in 3 to 5 days of being laid. Last year with our Monarch Project, one child got to see on our grounds, well, actually right around the corner, but within the block, got to see his very first monarch butterfly ever. We watched the monarch butterfly lay an egg. We were actually able to bring that egg in and hatch it and release it. So this child was able to have the full experience of a monarch butterfly. And he named it Yertle.
It kind of reminds me of what we would do when we were kids. We'd go out and we'd collect frog eggs and watch them all become tadpoles and then frogs.
Right. And think about frogs. Mm-hmm. Frogs are another amazing bioindicator. They're on the very, very front run of the species that can be affected by pollution. So if they're in polluted waters because of their amphibious nature, our frogs are gone.
So is there any other programs or any, we've got about 2 minutes left, so I don't want to miss out on really important stuff. Are there any other programs that you'd like to share? There's so many, huh?
Boy, there are so many. We are really excited. We're in the process of building a food gleaning project, and we really want to increase awareness of food waste because there are people in our community who don't have enough food. And 90% of the food scraps in the United States end up in the landfill. In addition to that, we have many landowners in our community who can't manage the abundance of their orchards and their gardens. But O'Hara has the resources and the volunteer pool that we're actually able to go out and glean food. We have our commercial kitchen, so we can gently process the food. We can then distribute it to organizations that feed people. Mm-hmm. And we also are going to be able to use some of what we've gleaned in food preparation and preservation classes for community members. We're really excited about our adult learning series, which will kick off this September. We have a food cache preserving the harvest theme for the entire month of September. And then we also have our curiosity camps, which is ages 9+, that will be coming back into the test kitchen, which is a partnership that we do with Montana State University and Harvest of the Month.
So we've kind of run out of time.
Oh,
please tell everyone how they might find you or reach you.
Okay, so they can reach us at either our website, which is theoharacommons.org, or at our email address, which is info@theoharacommons.org. We're also on Facebook and Instagram.
Thank you so much, Samantha. This is Heartstock
Radio.
Thank you. Oh, you're welcome. This is Heartstock Radio, and we've been speaking with Samantha O'Byrn of O'Hara Commons. Thank you, everyone, for joining us and listening. We will see you next week. Peace.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at buteamericaradio.org. That's right.